Hello, and welcome to Season 4 of Fresh Growth, a podcast by the Western SARE program. That's Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education. I'm your host, Steve Elliott, alongside co-host Stacy Clary. Thanks for listening for the past three seasons and joining us as we sit down with more innovative producers from around the West. Just for background, Western SARE is funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture to promote sustainable farming and ranching across the American West through research, education, and communication efforts like this podcast. Fresh Growth introduces producers and agricultural professionals who are embracing new ways of farming and ranching. They'll tell us about their experiences adopting more sustainable agricultural practices and the challenge and benefits they've seen. Today's guest is Sarah Stallard at the Las Vegas Livestock in Nevada. Sarah's a seventh-generation farmer. She moved to Las Vegas in 2016 to work for her uncles to help start their new farm, where she's now the farm manager. Sarah, welcome, and thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you for having me.
To start us off, please tell us a bit about your farm, where it's located, and also your connection with the local waste and recycling company, Republic Services.
Yeah, so we're based in Las Vegas, Nevada. Not on the Strip, obviously, but a little bit north of that, probably like a half hour north on the I-15. And the connection that we have with Republic Services is we actually have our farm like on their property. So we lease this land to raise our pigs. And we kind of entered that relationship due to a very difficult time to find land and acreage that has water rights. So they had an established well here and they were willing to work with us to help find a solution for organic waste. It was kind of being talked about in California at the time that we started that they might be banning organic waste going into landfills. And Republic Service had just, you know, really upped their recycling efforts and installed this state-of-the-art recycling program in Las Vegas. And so we kind of saw an opportunity to work with them to accomplish our goals as well as help them with kind of things that they might have been worried about. So we're out here now with them. We still partner in a lot of ways, but we are separate businesses. And we are basically, just to describe the landscape a bit, it's very dry. We get, I think our average rainfall is like an inch and a half a year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and so
and probably all in two storms. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much like during the monsoon season.
Yeah.
And it's very rocky, not a lot of brush, mostly like creosol and not even sagebrush really. And the soil quality is pretty bad.
But other than that, you give us some
details? It's beautiful.
Yeah. Give us some details about the operation, how big it is, what you raise, farming philosophy practices. I mean, just talk about what you do.
For sure, yeah. We are primarily hogs. So we got started, my family's been in the hog industry forever and feeding food scraps as part of that. So hogs are, they just fit right into that. They're omnivores, so they're not too picky about what food scraps come in.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 5,000, fluctuating anywhere around that 5,000 head mark of hogs. We're feeder to finish, so we get them in at about 60 pounds, and we'll raise them until they're around 250.
Mm-hmm.
And during the pandemic, we kind of saw a slowdown, so we looked to diversify our animals a little bit. So we added a goat herd at that time, as well as lambs. We also have just like a little tiny bit of cattle, about 5 of them. And they are actually eating a vegetable only food waste that we supplement with some hay as well. And then we also have a flock. I was trying to call them a herd, but they're a flock of laying hens. Mm-hmm. That we use to sell eggs locally.
Okay. Where do you get your
little bit of everything?
Yeah. Where do you get your food waste?
So our food waste is coming in from like a majority of like three sources is how I like to break it down. We get a mixed ration that's coming in from the casinos. Mm-hmm. That's going to be all like the kitchens in the casinos are doing prep work or whatever's coming off the buffets that's uneaten and not able to be donated. And they'll have like a big container for collection that's there. So that's like coming in by the ton, but it's all mixed together. And it's typically a little cleaner because they're either doing some sort of pre-sorting process in the kitchens or post-kitchens, somebody's working in the trash line, mm-hmm. taking out contaminants. We also get food from warehouses. So, for example, we collect from a ice cream factory right now. The ice cream that comes out, like, at the end of the day when they wash out their lines, their production lines, or anything that is, like, mispackaged, mm-hmm. mislabeled, anything like that, we're going to get from warehouses. And that's kind of less on a... We don't always know when that's coming in, so it'll be, like, a lot coming in. The ice cream's pretty consistent, but, like, other things, like, we've had Sour Patch Kids come in before, or chips or something like that. Those are coming in a big batch, but not as frequently, not, like, once a week or anything like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And the last source is grocery stores. So right now, we collect for Costco, and we're looking to partner with other grocery store chains as well this year. So we're kind of in the works for that.
Maybe this is just a really simple answer, but I'm just kind of curious how this all works. You go out and pick it all up. And also, you said some of them, like, it doesn't come in for a while and then you get a lot. Like, how do you manage the not consistency in what you have?
Yeah, for sure. So thankfully, I do not have to work with the collection of the food scraps because it is like a full-time job. So we have a sister company called Combs Brothers, which is just my uncle's last name. So him and my other uncle have been running this. It's like a waste management business. So they're not only dealing in the organic food waste collection, but also recyclables. So they can offer the full package to these companies. But they're the ones that are actually going to go out, pick up the food, and get it to me. And so the consistent source of feed is the casinos. So all that waste that's coming from them, we're going to be getting the boxes from them probably like once or twice a week from each location that we service. So we're always guaranteed from them, from the ice cream factory. As well, we're probably picking up 2 boxes to 3 boxes a day from that. And when the warehouse product, when we do get it in, we do try and kind of limit, like, we're not going to dump it all in to process as feed in one go. We're going to try and meter it because the nutritional value of just a single food source is not as good as the nutritional value of that mixed food source that we're getting from restaurants and stores. So that's kind of how we deal with that. Usually it's palletized material packaged in some way. And we'll be able to kind of just meter, put that in. Maybe we'll put in 3 or 4 pallets each time we process food. Mm-hmm. So we kind of mix it in slowly.
So it's not a whole big feed of Sour Patch Kids.
Exactly, yeah. The nutritional value isn't too good for them, just like, you know, kids can't grow up on candy.
Exactly.
And you said you market locally. Is that a selling point for your customers, that you're collecting this food waste? Do they like hearing about that?
Yeah, so so my grandfather actually had his farm here first about 60 years ago. He had come out here because he saw a lot of opportunity in food waste collection with the strip and its buffets. That was like very big back when he started. Mm-hmm. It was a lot smaller back then. So now where his original location was is surrounded by urban areas as of now, which is what prompted our move out here and his son's taking over and kind of modernizing. But because of that and his permanence in the community and people always knowing that we've done this food scrap collection, the community is very, very supportive of us, and they, you know, we've never really had any problems in terms of, you know, not having a supportive community here. And now as the sustainability movement is kind of something everyone's talking about, I think it's even been more positive for us to be able to have that. And we get requests for tours a lot. We do market locally, so we kind of started the eggs as our first step towards that. We do an egg delivery service because those are just a lot easier to push through the regulations. And we do market pork locally, but it's more challenging because Nevada, the whole state, does not have a USDA processing facility for meat. So it creates quite a challenge to be able to offer like cuts or anything of that we could like sell to the public. So we did try it for a little bit, and now we're kind of looking at potentially narrowing our selection just because the cost is kind of high for us to have to find someone that's willing to process our animals, USDA certified, and get it back. So we're potentially trying to go more wholesale route. So we're kind of in a transition in that right now.
Yeah. So, if you, the wholesale route would ship whole animals, you know, to a facility out of state, is that the way that would work? Or?
Yeah, we would ship our live animals probably to California, which is probably where the closest processing facility is. And then we could get whole carcasses back for people that are like willing to break them down into cuts or sell at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just struggled finding a place like a USDA processing facility that's able to take our product like in a small batch, put our label on it as cuts and have all that done in one place.
Yeah.
And so it's been challenging, and we've been kind of working with legislation too to get a processing facility here, because everyone that raises livestock here is facing the same challenges.
Yeah. And it's not just Nevada too. We've heard this in other places where there's livestock producers or want to be, and the processing is just impossible to source.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because it's like, even if we go to someone that's smaller scale that is used to like putting on a custom label, they're booked out for like years at this point. And I think COVID really kind of opened the public's eyes to that. So hopefully legislation will work in our favor as we try and kind of put more effort into making it easier to have this like locally distributed, especially for meat products.
Yeah. And it would be so nice if you could like provide your products back to the casinos.
Yeah. And that's always been the dream of my uncles. They've always really wanted that.
Yeah.
To complete the circle, they like to say.
Absolutely, yeah. And you can see the chefs going for that too. Locally produced, locally small farm, local production.
Can you talk a little bit as well about how you raise? Because I know you've mentioned, you know, humane practices. Like, what does that look like for you?
So we're a little different from maybe a traditional hog farms. So most hog farms are like completely enclosed in like the barns that have the big ventilation. One of the reasons that we're not doing that is because we don't have power on our site. So anything that we have to run has to be run by solar, our generator, and solar doesn't really generate enough power for like a ventilation system.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the nice things is that we're a pretty dry climate and a dry heat, so we don't necessarily need to have them all closed up to keep them healthy. So what we do have are these big hoop barns that we've actually set raised on concrete blocks. So that offers a lot of ventilation. The concrete is something that the pigs won't destroy because they're very destructive. and the shade is pretty much all they like. Since we're a dry heat, the shade provides a lot of cooling. And we also do use sprinkler systems when we start reaching the high temps. But it's worked really well for us with that dry heat to raise them like this. And they also have access to an outdoor area that's uncovered. So they'll go into a pen. There's two pens like per hoop barn, and we have four hoop barns. And we'll put about 600 into one pen. And they will live there for the whole time that they're on the farm. So we don't separate them by size or anything. And they get to be social. They're living in a big group. They have a lot of space. And they have a deep bedded system. So they're actually raised on, right now we're using sod from practice fields from football, from our football team. I don't want to get too specific with the name because sometimes they get weird about that. But basically the sports teams in Vegas, the sod from their practice fields, they'll recycle that with us. And we actually use that as a deep bedding. So they get to root around and express natural behaviors. So it really helps reduce that aggression of them, like living in a large group, because they don't get as bored. And they do have access to feed 24/7. So there's a concreted feed floor that comes off the side of that, that they're able to go on and off whenever they choose. So I think that one of the things that people like and see as humane is the amount of space that they have. They're able to express social behaviors, and they can move about a lot and express natural behaviors, such as rooting.
Yeah.
Great.
They can be hogs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Why did you come back to the farm when you moved to Vegas and joined the...
Yeah, so I came in 2016, and I actually didn't grow up on my grandfather's farm. My mom did, and when she got married, she moved with her family to New Mexico, so I actually grew up there. And then I ended up, but I really enjoyed the summers that I would spend with my cousins at my grandfather's place, and I always knew I wanted to be involved in agriculture or with animals in some capacity. And I didn't feel like going to vet school and spending all that money. So I majored in animal science at Colorado State. And right when I finished my master's degree there, my uncle was starting this partnership with Republic Services. So the timing just kind of worked out perfectly. And he offered me the position as farm manager to help basically start the operation out here. Sound Republic site, so
worked out for you very well, and them as well. Very good timing. Yeah. I'm not clear how many other livestock producers are in your area, but if there are they paying attention to what you're doing, whether it's the marketing or the how you're raising the hogs, the food waste? Are they showing attention to what you're doing?
Yeah. So. In Southern Nevada, there's probably not another livestock producer of our scale, you know, probably within 50 miles of us. There's a lot of cow-calf operations in Nevada. That's kind of like the big thing, or just cattle in general.
Mm-hmm.
But we are involved in Farm Bureau, and so we do network with a lot of farmers pretty often. And we recently did a small ag conference in Las Vegas to kind of connect with urban farmers, so people that might be farming here but on a smaller scale than we are. And there was like a lot of attention to that. Like, we had a lot of people show up and kind of network. So I think we do have a lot of people reach out to us. Most people do know about us if they're farming in the area. And we're always willing to kind of help and network with other farmers. And we also get a lot of people that are coming from out of state that have heard about the way that we're using food scraps. And if they are interested in doing something similar, they always want to come to her. So I'd say that's kind of like the biggest thing, is people that are interested in utilizing food waste the same way that we do. So I'd say in that space, Our name is definitely out there.
You're very well known. Yeah. Yeah. You said there's a lot of tours. Yeah. A lot of people want to come out and see the operation.
Yeah. So I try to kind of, I don't, you know, it's hard to do tours like all the time. So last year we did our first open house where we were open to the public for like individuals that have wanted to come out. Cause we try and limit it to groups of people. So it's more efficient for us. Like, so then normally it's like conferences or, we get a lot of people that are involved in waste management. So they're curious on how Republic is helping divert organic waste and they'll come to our operation. Or if they work for food processing companies, they're going to come out and, and check it out to just see the options that there are for food waste diversion.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Has there been anything that you guys have tried that really didn't work, and what did you learn from that experience?
I mean, I feel like we're always trying things that don't work really well. I mean, we have to kind of fine tune them. So, like one of the most recent challenges we've run into is our feed is already very wet. So it's like a liquid feed pretty much because food is a high percentage of water. So we knew that coming from my grandfather's operation, but when we took on the ice cream facility, we were adding a lot more of like a wet product to an already wet product. And our troughs were just, it was basically just like running out of them as fast as it was going in them. So we had to learn how to process that separately of the way that we process the feed that is not in liquid form.
Right.
So that's kind of like the challenges that we've run into. We've kind of learned like, you know, things that, so like liquids are a little bit more difficult for us to take. So things like that, but I can't think of anything that we've tried that we've had to completely abandon yet, but we're always having to fine tune it and kind of struggle through a lot of things before we get them right.
Yeah. Well, it's a learning process, as they say.
Yes, continually.
So you started in 2016, and so you're about 8 years in, and you talk about being a learning process. You're enjoying it. This is a good fit for you. Is that true?
Yeah. So I was actually just talking about this with my friend the other day, but I think there's definitely days, like everybody has their days where they're like, okay, why am I doing this? You know, when it's like 110 out here, it tends to come up more often for me. But I think the thing that I enjoy most about it is that I can feel really good about what we're doing, and we're addressing a need that is very prevalent and it's happening now. And we're able to take waste, keep it from producing methane, filling up the landfill, and actually re-enter it into the food cycle. So when I watch the news and everyone's like freaking out about climate change or all these things, it's good to know that, like, you know, I'm making a difference pretty much daily, and I'm able to actually do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is very nice. I think like it helps me get through. It's been helping me get through these 8 years.
For sure. What advice would you give to young growers or any growers who want to farm sustainably and successfully?
Yeah, so I think one thing I always like to tell people is you don't have to be born into agriculture or like have grown up with it to work in it successfully. So I was kind of adjacent to ag. And when I went to college, I felt a little out of place because I felt like everyone that was in my major had operations that they had already been growing up on and knew so much. And I think I see that changing, and I think it was kind of changing when I was in school. And I think that's great because, you know, it's the people that don't come from ag that can really come in. And if they appreciate it, they can really bring new and fresh ideas that are going to change a lot of things. So, I mean, what we do is not at all the traditional way of raising hogs. Like, it's not the standard practice in the U.S.
Yeah.
So we almost value people coming from new backgrounds and things so that they're able to understand what we do and bring a fresh perspective. So I think that's one thing I like to tell younger kids, you know, don't be intimidated. You don't have to know everything before you go in, you know, like it's never too late to start and like see what value you can bring to agriculture. And yeah, for anyone wanting to like farm like sustainably, I think it's just looking to see what need your community has and how you can fit a farming practice into that. So I guess what I mean by that is basically farming is already, I think, lends itself to be pretty sustainable. It's not making a ton of money, so you're always going to have to learn how to reuse and recycle things. And if you're growing on land, you're going to want to keep it healthy. So I think it fits really well into sustainability practices. So if you can see something that your community needs, you know, we saw, like my grandfather here 60 years ago saw that there was a lot of food waste here in the desert and we can't grow crops out here. So basically we can rely 100% on that and become a cog in that wheel to make it more sustainable. Yeah. So just looking for opportunities like that is, I think, can really help people be the sustainability of their communities, if that makes sense.
That makes great sense.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Sarah, for taking time and talking with us and about what you do. And it's great. It's great work you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really fun.
It was. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Growth. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information on Western Serre grants and our learning resources, visit westernserre.org.